Hi, this is Rudolph Campos. Welcome to our first broad podcast of a series with author R. Michael Gordon.
Good evening, Rudolph. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you, sir. I am your host for today's broadcast. We're going to discuss one of our favorite topics, which is Jack the Ripper, and who Mr. Gordon believes, is the real Jack. I've collected a list of questions that we've gathered from our social media sites. I don't know if you had a chance to participate, but we've been on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Google+. If you didn't get your questions in on time, not to worry. We're going to do another podcast shortly. In the meantime, let's welcome our guest.
Thank you very much.
Published author, screenwriter, R. Michael Gordon. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, sir. My first question, right off the top. My first question, which is your very first book?
Well, my first book was published was Alias Jack the Ripper, based on the Ripper murder series that everyone knows about in London that occurred from 1888, and depending on who you talk to, 1888 to 1889, and perhaps 1891. I believe 1891. Of course, at the time, I believe that the individual we're talking about is an individual known as Severino Kozlowski, otherwise known as George Chapman.
Question. This is from one of our listeners. How confident are you that this George Chapman, Severino Kozlowski,
yes,
did I pronounce it right?
Yes.
Is the real Jack the Ripper? And why hasn't he been discovered before?
Well, he's been known for a long time as a potential suspect since around, 1903. Why am I confident? That's a good question. I came at this looking at it from probably a little different perspective than most people. A lot of authors, Ripper authors, etc., look at it as, I know who the Ripper is, and I'm going to write a book about him. I came at it a little different perspective, and basically I thought, I don't know who this guy is. Let's look at all the suspects. Let's try to eliminate them. And by using the actual data as a template, I eliminated most of the suspects. And using circumstantial evidence, I was able to bring it down to, surprisingly, only one. And that one individual was George Chapman, i.e. Severin Kozlowski.
So you even had a chance to do the ridiculous ones, such as, was it a member of the royal family? Was it a Mason doing it?
Right. So Albert Victor, Duke of Clarence in Avondale, he was suspected for a while, but not really a serious suspect. Some people still look at him, but when you eliminate the suspects, he's just not there in time. He wasn't in London enough to actually be Jack the Ripper. He didn't have the skills either. And to be honest with you, historically speaking, he was not exactly what one would refer to as a ladies' man.
Okay. Next question. What do you believe triggered these brutal killings?
Still going?
Yeah.
Triggered it. That's a good question. The bottom line is nobody really knows. Since he wasn't captured, wasn't interrogated, and never discussed it, no one can actually tell you why he was being a serial killer, which is what he actually was. So that question cannot be answered at this point until we have something written down, and we haven't had that.
Oh, great. So in other words, after all, these weren't just robbery or casual robbery went bad type of serial murders.
No, he had a definite theme he was working on. They were all prostitutes. He was looking for body parts. Now, why he was looking for body parts, again, these are all trophies. And you really can't understand why, other than he wanted body parts. And he was risking his life every time that he went out to try to find one. And that's one of the keys. You got to understand that if he was caught, he was dead. So here he is risking his life to get these body parts on these women. And he didn't get them on the first two or three murders either. He had bad lighting conditions. He had too small of a knife. He was learning his craft.
So how should we address this guy? Is George Chapman or Severino Kozlowski?
Well, during the Ripper murders, he was Severino Kozlowski. But only after he finished in London, went overseas and came back, that's when he changed his name to George Chapman. And that's why most people refer to him as George Chapman, the borough poisoner. But his real name was Severino Antoniovich Kozlowski.
Gotcha. So why is Jack the Ripper so well remembered today?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. Basically, the name. I mean, Jack the Ripper is a pretty startling name. Along with that, the fact that he wasn't caught makes it an unsolved murder case, and people are always interested in unsolved murder cases. And to be perfectly honest, we're talking about a serial killer here who was not only not caught, but he was murdering while he was being watched over, while he was being hunted, And while the press, which is eventually becoming the world press, were keeping track of his murders. And that's what makes it most definitively terrorizing, because he didn't have the highest body count, but he certainly had the highest press. And they were tracking every single move he made, and Scotland Yard just didn't get him. And that's why this case is remembered to this day.
Great. Why didn't they catch him?
Well, there's a number of reasons why they didn't catch him. First of all, if you look at the case itself, in theory, he was only killing strangers, although there is a lot of information that he might have had a little bit of knowledge of who they were, because he knew he was killing prostitutes. He knew he was killing individuals that were weak and vulnerable. And he wasn't killing people that he really knew in his regular life. The methods that we're using there in Scotland Yard in 1888-89 are pretty crude. And they really didn't have the techniques, the ability to find this guy. I mean, this guy's killing strangers in an area that's extremely well-packed. And they just couldn't, they didn't have the details to do it.
Give us a little bit more background on this guy, this George Chapman slash Severino Kozlowski.
Well, he was a individual who was born in Poland. He got trained in Warsaw as a surgeon, a junior surgeon. Did a very good job with that. Had his own surgical clinic. He had his own home. He's 22 years old. And then all of a sudden he leaves, never comes back to Poland, ends up in London, and we have the Ripper murders beginning there.
And another question, why is there a discrepancy in the number of murders? You can cover that a little bit better than I can.
Well, basically, it depends on how you count. There's a canonical series known as the Central Ripper Corps, and those are five or six murders. Now, those murders were added to one from Martha Tabor. Most people believe now that she was the first Ripper victim killed in the George Yard dwellings. In fact, he was living in the George Yard dwellings while she was being murdered. So that's about as close as you can get. But there's a problem with the murder count, because after the fifth or sixth murder, Scotland Yard was so intense on trying to find this guy. They were spending so much money trying to find this guy and so much effort, they couldn't afford it. They were bankrupting themselves. So they had to tell the public, okay, he's stopped, finished. He's done as much as he can do. These other murders that happened in 1889, 1890, 91, these are from somebody else. These are copycat killings. And they had to do that. But be honest with you, he was killing up to about 1891. So the fact that they only had five or six in the middle of the whole series, that really is just historically incorrect.
So how would a modern-day profiler or behavioral psychologist look at it now?
That's a little difficult to look at. Again, he wasn't caught, but we only have what he was doing as a way to look at it. He was learning his craft, certainly, because if you look at the murder series, there were a couple of attacks before the Ripper series began, and he changed his weapon, his style, his method, but he was a fast learner. Now, what most people don't realize, when you're looking at George Chapman, he tried to purchase poison in 1888, was when the Ripper murders began. This is around March or April. Now, when you're buying poison, when he did get it around 1895, he used it for one thing, for murdering women. So we have to assume in 1888, he was trying to purchase poison to murder women. Well, he's a surgeon. He's a junior surgeon. Very good surgeon from what I could understand, what the researchers come up with. So you're looking at an individual who wants to murder women. He can't use poison. He just uses knife. So he went to the blade, and the rest is history.
Great. So how close did he ever get to getting caught?
Actually, very close at sometimes. Very, very close. If you look at the Hanbury Street murder, that murder was when the sun was coming up. It wasn't up at night. It wasn't in the dark area, in some shadowy area. You're looking at a backyard. He had to go through the building, which was occupied by 23 or 24 people. He was in there long enough to take body parts, to rip her completely, to murder her, and to leave. And he was actually seen from the behind. So that was very close. Now you look at the Mitre Square murder later on. This was the night of the double event, September 30th, 1888. With that second murder, you had Elizabeth Streisand's first murder. The Mitre Street murder, Mitre Square murder, you're looking at an individual in an area which is completely surrounded by police officers, looking for him, vigilance committee personnel. He goes in with a woman. He murders her in the shadow. It took less than 8 or 9 minutes because the officer was doing a patrol around it, which took about 14 and a half, 15 minutes. He kills her, takes the body parts, moves into the shadows. A police officer stumbles on the corpse, immediately thinks, Ripper. But he leaves the woman's body, knows she's dead, runs out to go find some help. He leaves the Mitre Square. Very close. He must have been within a few yards. Later on in the series, 1891, you have Cole's murder. She's the final murder victim in the Ripper series, 1891. At that time, the way the Scotland Yard was doing their operation in the Ripper series, you had to stay with the victim. Remember the first one? He left. Mm-hmm. This time, she's been attacked. She's still alive. The officer has to stay there, and Jack the Ripper is walking away in the fog. So he got all the breaks on those.
By the way, I forgot to tell our listeners, the name of the book is Alias Jack the Ripper.
That's correct.
Written by R. Michael Gordon, published through McFarlane Publishers. You can find it easily on Amazon, Amazon.com. You can find it on BarnesandNoble.com. If you can't find it, I've posted my link below. Contact me directly, and I'll make sure you can get a copy somehow, some way. If you'd like an autographed copy, uh-huh. I'm also giving you an opportunity to get one directly from Mr. Gordon, and it'll be on my link directly below the podcast.
And most bookstores also, you can order them through there as well.
Fantastic. So there's a question that's been bugging me, and I want you to tell me about this. There's a letter that you have in the book, and it's called The Letter from Hell.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Well, Jack got his name from a letter, the Dear Boss letter, and he signed it Jack the Ripper. But unfortunately for this case, that wasn't written by the actual killer. There is, however, one letter known as the Letter from Hell, or the George Lusk letter, that was written by the killer. Now, George Lusk was a businessman. He was a builder. He was head of the Mile End Vigilance Committee. Most of you would like to think he was of the Whitechapel Vigilance Committee, but he wasn't. He was the Mile End Vigilance Committee. A bunch of guys got together to try to help the police. Well, the killer decided somebody else took my name. Somebody's calling themselves Jack the Ripper. I'm not Jack. So he sent the only thing to George Lusk that the serial killer could send, the only person who did the murders. He sent the letter in a bloody box along with half of the kidney, Catherine Edlow's kidney. Now that was a left kidney. It was called a Ginny kidney. She was an alcoholic. And what's interesting about the kidney is it gives you information not only about the killer, but it gives you definitive proof that this was from her kidney. And what's going on here is that this kidney was preserved in red wine. Now, a kidney taken from a corpse in a autopsy room, it would begin to degrade. If you're getting a kidney from a specimen used in surgeries or training, etc., for doctors, you're looking at it being preserved in alcohol. This was preserved in red wine. The second part is the renal artery is 3 inches long. There was 2 inches left in the body, 1 inch left on the kidney. So you have to ask yourself,